Wisdom. I think Christians and the church, I think people in general, but I think Christians struggle with it, essentially because wisdom can be connected to judgment sometimes. It can also be positioning ourselves where we don't belong. It can be connected to like debating and quarreling and fighting. It can be connected to boasting. So I think there's a disconnect between, or at least a tension between being spiritual and being wise, I think, in the way we perceive it and the way we act as Christians. I'm putting that out there. You can mull on that if you like, but doesn't really. If you agree with me, that if you disagree and you think that wisdom is okay, then you'll just like the message anyway. And if you agree with me, then I'll try and explain why I think, you know what I mean? Whatever. It doesn't matter either way. So Proverbs 3:7, as an example of a verse that sometimes I think we might misread in order to think we shouldn't be wise, and there are a few. So Proverbs 3:7 says, "Do not be wise in your own." It says, "Do not be wise in your own eyes." So it says, "Do not be wise in your own eyes." And there are a bunch of other verses that say, you know, you shouldn't trust in your wisdom. You shouldn't, you know, be all about your wisdom. It says, but it doesn't say here. It doesn't say, "Do not be wise." It says, "Do not be wise in your own eyes." So we need to be real careful. We need to be a bit wise about how we translate and interpret those verses, so we don't get them out of context. It doesn't say don't be wise. It says do not be wise in your own eyes. And then in Proverbs 3, from verses 13 to 24, I'm going to read to kind of give you a sense of the emphasis on the Bible around this. So there's one verse that says don't be wise in your own eyes. And then from verse 13, it says, "Blessed are those who find wisdom, those who gain understanding. For she is more profitable than silver and yields better returns than gold. She is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand. In her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her. Those who hold fast will be blessed. Who hold her fast will be blessed. By wisdom, the Lord laid the earth's foundations. By understanding, he set the heavens in place. By his knowledge, the watery depths were divided, and the clouds let drop the dew. My son, do not let wisdom and understanding out of your sight. Preserve sound judgment and direction. They will be life for you, an ornament to grace your neck. Then you will go on your way in safety, and your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet." So we get nervous, I think. I'm just putting it out there. I'm putting this on you so you can. Like when it says in verse 18, it says, "She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her," I think we get nervous about her. You know, Jesus is life, and he's the vine, and we're connected to him. So some of these descriptions of wisdom are incredibly powerful. They're attributing wisdom with these amazing traits that I think we get nervous about, and with reason. But I think if we're careful about how we apply wisdom, then the pursuit of wisdom is a wonderful, godly, righteous thing to do. And we could use more of it. So, James in the New Testament, I'm not going to focus on Proverbs because it's Old Testament, and maybe we might think that since Jesus has come, he is our wisdom, which is true. We don't need, like, we can't use that old wisdom because we're in the new covenant. I think that's a possible thing. All right, I'm going to stop for 1 second. Do you believe me? Does anyone feel that tension ever in church life, ever? That there is like a disconnect between spirituality and faith and wisdom in living? Because I think it's there. And I think if we can't see it, we're missing it. Sometimes we say like, I don't want to step on toes. But it's like if you go, some people, like hyper faith, right, will go to the doctor and not take medicine because they're going to live in faith instead of taking the medicine. And like, cool, if God is speaking to you, you know, go for it. But you could also use the medicine. So like there's this, I think sometimes we go this faith route, which is so appropriate and so right, but we just leave wisdom and knowledge and understanding by the wayside. And Jesus doesn't do that. The Bible doesn't do that. Let's think of another. Like sometimes like ecology and environment, we kind of have this faith thing where it's like, you know, new heaven, new earth, we're trusting Jesus. And so we don't care about the environment so much. It's like we're not going to be super careful about our usage and like our carbon footprint. We're not going to worry about it because we're living by faith. Like we're just not focused on it because we're all about like spiritual realm. Like let's go. And we're not thinking much about the physical realm and our impact on the world that God has given us authority over. So you understand what I'm saying about how there's this disconnect between like a faith, like this idea of a faith-based life and this idea of like wisdom and how they're actually, we feel like they're the antithesis of each other. A professor said that the antithesis of spirituality is not wisdom. The antithesis of spirituality is unspirituality. And spirituality is not inherently wise or otherwise. And wisdom is not inherently evil or otherwise. You can have wise spirituality and you can have wise unspirituality. All right, so we need to be careful, more careful than we are, that we don't live just faith. I mean, it is all faith. Like, I'm not... It's faith. But you read James. Go read James. I'll show you my faith by my works, right? So it's all faith. And Jesus is all man, but he's also all God, right? There's this tension, right? So we can't just give away one and accept the other. It's Christian life, right? There's always, like, there's one thing held here and another thing held here. It's sort of like you're sanctified, but you're justified. It's like you've got to... There's a lot of tension. And this is one we need to walk in tension on. We can't just say, look, enough. I have faith. I'm done. We need to add to that. I believe we need to also walk in wisdom. I'm trying to be careful with my language, which I think highlights my point that there's a tension between faith and wisdom. Because if I say the wrong thing, I'll lose you all. And afterwards, you'll come and say, you didn't remember 1 Corinthians where it says, which it does. Okay. So anyway, so James, it's only 5 chapters. Go read it. It's only 5 chapters. It's definitely worth a read. If you're, you know, if you're in a gap in your reading plan, and you just start the new year, go for it. Do James. But it's a book full of wisdom, and it's based on a Sermon on the Mount, largely on Jesus' teaching. It's also kind of got some steeped in some of the Proverbs from the Old Testament. So James, whose name might actually be more like Jacob, he's the leader of the church in Jerusalem when Peter goes. And so for 20 years, through famine and persecution, and he's eventually martyred, he leads like the original kind of first faith community. So this guy kind of gets, he gets a lot of stuff, right? He gets how to live. And so he's writing this book full of wisdom on how you should live the Christian life and in context. But what I noticed is, and it makes sense coming from James, living through famine and persecution and being martyred, is that he grounds the whole thing in patience. At the beginning, in James 1, verses 2 to 5, it says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." So it's like, don't run away from the trials. Accept them with patience and perseverance. And in verse 5, right after this patience thing, it says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you." And then in James 5:7, right at the end, it literally just says, be patient. So I think if we can accept that we need wisdom to live, as the skill of living, we need wisdom, and we should live in faith, but we should live with wisdom as well. I think that what we'd notice from James, what I was getting, is that wisdom, first point, right, if you're going to, wisdom works with patience. That wisdom works with patience. I think that the James realizes that the Christian life is operated across a long time scale. He says that life is a vapor, but you've also got every single day to live out. So I think that James realizes there's some patience going to be required. It's not all going to... Well, look, think about the disciples. When Jesus ascends into heaven and they're kind of waiting this new kingdom that's promised, and they're like, "Oh, cool, we're not even going to see the grave and he's going to come back. It's going to happen." So they've got this anticipation on a scale of weeks or months. And 20 years later, James is kind of saying, okay, maybe not like just a week or a month or a day. We're going to require some patience and we're going to need wisdom across a long time scale. So wisdom works with patience. Jesus says in Luke 7:35 that wisdom is proved right by all her children. Yeah? So the acts of wisdom in a moment aren't necessarily going to cause a change that you can see in this instant. But you wait for wisdom's children to grow up, and then you see if wisdom's been proven right. So James kind of connects, I believe, connects wisdom and patience. I have an example. Would you like to hear my example? Yes, you would. Good. I was watching, Eli and Eva are allowed to watch a little bit of TV. Not too much, we're responsible parents. They normally like to watch planes, Super Wings, Anyway, it's okay. And there's another one called Zig and Sharko. Oh, Zig and Sharko. That's it. It's not very good. Sorry, Eli. I apologize. I don't like Zig and Sharko. So one day, you may or may not like David Attenborough, but one day on his list came up Africa by David Attenborough. I was like, yes, let's watch Africa. Come on, just anything but Zig and Sharko. So we got it. We watched a bit of Africa, and they were keen, and there was this scene where a leopard was hunting a gazelle, and I was like, oh no, this is not going to be kid-friendly in just a second. But this is my story, right, is that that leopard or that lion, he's kind of got these claws, he's got this mouth, he's got all these skills. He's kind of got like, just, it's like killer written all over it. He's got camouflage, it's so strong. But, thank you, BBC documentary, the leopard waits until the gazelle or whatever is within 4 meters before it'll even go for it. So Heath, you're okay. Stuart, if I'm a leopard, you're in trouble. He gets so close. It's unbelievable. They get so, so, so close. So you might have all the skills and knowledge, all the capability, the teeth, the muscles, the claws, but if you aren't patient and attentive, you will miss your opportunity. So we need to rehearse patience. We need to practice patience. We need to value it. I get very distracted. Practice patience with an S, not a C. Math teacher, report writing, so annoying. We need to practice patience. In fact, I think it's an S. I always get that wrong. Practice patience. Value it. We need to begin now and think long term. I would say as a quick application point, what I've heard as a wise way of doing this is to think beyond, like when you say long term, don't think 5-10. Think beyond your lifetime. Like what are the implications of my action? Not in 5 years, 10 years. What's the implication next generation, like 50, 60 years' time, beyond my lifetime? If you can think in lifespans instead of years, then your actions are more likely to be wise. I was like, wow, that's an amazing thing. So just quickly, patience is not procrastination. I'm not saying like I can avoid this for my whole life. Now, that's the opposite of what I'm saying. We need to begin now and continue without giving up. Like that lion doesn't say, or the leopard doesn't say, there'll be a gazelle tomorrow. I'm thinking long term. I can wait tomorrow. I'll just go get it later. No, they go every day and they wait patiently and they're ready and they're doing the right things. They're like sharpening their claws or whatever it is you do as a leopard, and they kind of crouch down and they wait and they stalk these animals, and then they get their opportunity because they are patient and wise. Yeah, cool. Thank you. Thanks, Liz. All right, cool. Second one. So wisdom works with patience. That's what I see. And we need to be living wise lives. We need it. We can't avoid it. We need to think about it more than we do. Wisdom works with patience, and I believe that wisdom works with love. Wisdom works with love. And this is, to me, the big thrust of a lot of verses that you might interpret to say, look, wisdom's not that great. I'm not sure how it fits with a Christian worldview. A lot of the time, what those verses are actually saying is that you lack love. The whole thing about food sacrificed to idols, and how like knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. Actually, the person had good wisdom, but they lacked more wisdom to apply love to it. So they were right, yeah, you can eat it, but you should love your brother more than your wisdom. So you need to add wisdom to love. Wisdom works with love. My example is an apocalyptic house shelter. They're these people who make like earth ships. It's been a very ecological morning. That's two references. Is it too many? We can't hack. We don't like it. Anyway, whatever. Maybe way more. Yeah, anyways. So, apocalyptic house shelter. So, like, the world ends. Devastating. Obviously, very, very sad. Nuclear something, and it goes bad. Not, I mean, ecology, maybe nuclear power is not as bad as we, because it's, like, very dense and Anyway, there's a nuclear war, there's nuclear bombs, and they go off, and there's not many people. But you, the Burns, have got, you're just in the right spot. Gary, I'm not sure why, anyway, just needs to go back a row. They've got an apocalyptic house shelter, and they have stored up all of the food they need. Well done. They called the apocalypse, like Jesus didn't come back, whatever, like it's not that apocalypse, but it's like an apocalyptic event. Anyways, so they called it and it happened and they've got all the food they need. Jono, is that all they need? They need water. Okay, they got water too. What else do they need apart from food and water? Well played, Jono. He probably is ready for this, so you should talk to him. They need food and water, but if they've just got enough food and water for themselves, they're in big trouble. They're in big trouble. Because you need food and water for you, but you either need, as well as that, to have a gun with a lot of bullets, or you need to have enough food for everyone in like a 1,000-kilometer radius. Right? It's wise to have enough food for yourself, like well played. But wisdom without love is going to get you in a whole lot of trouble. Because they're going to come and take it from you, unless you have the gun. I don't know how, so maybe if you didn't have a Christian worldview, maybe if you didn't believe in Jesus and his love for us, maybe the gun option is worth exploring. But not from this platform. We're talking, I don't know. I think it's probably short-sighted. So you need to not only have enough food for you in the apocalyptic house, you need food for everyone within a 1,000-kilometer radius. Biblically, it's my little girl crying. Biblically, wisdom is not about your success. It's not for your success, and it can't be about your pride. James 2 talks about not showing favoritism to people based on their appearance because it lacks love. You might think it's wise, like, oh, this guy's got something to offer me because he's got, like, his shiny new Porsche, comes out in, like, an expensive suit? A $10,000 suit, is that enough? A really expensive suit, and, like, he looks class, like, yes, my friend. But actually, we need to show love as well. That wisdom that sees that is not enough. You need to add love to it. James warns of the dangers of a lack of love. In 3:13 to 18, it says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth, for such wisdom does not come from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice." So wisdom works with love. I am going to throw out one passage with no comment, except that possibly as wealthy people, we should think about how we love. So I'm just going to read a passage. All right, this is the Bible. Don't look at me. James 5, verses 1 to 6. Again, it's in the Bible. It's possibly talking about like Roman oppressors, but I think this has been true throughout the ages. Like, not just now, but always, always, always. Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. Your wealth has rotted, and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. New Testament, mind you. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on the earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who was not opposing you. So, wisdom needs to work with love. Wisdom needs to work together with love. Love for people. It's not enough for it just to build your own resource base to make you successful, to kind of be political with it. It's got to work with love. Like, that's good. The wisdom to know and to build is great, but you need to work it with love. And James 4:17, just to highlight it, says that if anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. All right, so wisdom works with patience. Wisdom works with love. And the third thing, just in James that I see, it says that wisdom is recognizable. So wisdom works with patience. Wisdom works with love, and wisdom is recognizable. I wanted to talk about this because I wanted to give us like a filter around how we can kind of choose wise things. I like the thought of loving others. That's very useful. I think the long-term thinking is useful, but there's a good filter here biblically that would be remiss to leave out. So wisdom is recognizable. Just to highlight the truth of this, you've ever had that thing where you say like, oh, why didn't I think of that? Or have you ever had the thing where you say, I thought of that, but I didn't do anything about it, right? As it happens all the time. I couldn't think of like many, but I think like my brother, when we played cricket, it was all, like I'm right-handed, so it was all leg side. It was all leg side. So that we had like the house here, the pitch, and then the backyard. So you could only play like leg side. But my brother is left-handed, so I reckon, he reckons, he invented the reverse sweep. But he didn't invent the reverse sweep. He just thinks he did. Someone else did. But you know, you always get that thing where he's like, why didn't I think of that? And he might think he did, but he didn't. But as another example, right, everything in your house is like when you recognize wisdom, right? Your toaster is because you recognize wisdom. You're like, yes, yes, I can toast my bread and the butter will melt and the honey will be delicious. Your shoes, you saw some guy wearing shoes and you're like, I see that. That's wise. I'm going to get me some shoes, right? That's how it works. So wisdom is definitely recognizable. James 3:17, but the wisdom from above is first of all pure. It is also peace-loving, gentle at all times, and willing to yield to others. It is full of mercy and good deeds. It shows no favoritism and is always sincere. There's this wisdom from above that has certain characteristics to it. You can tell by these characteristics. Jesus spoke in wisdom and people knew. They could see it straight away. So ask yourself if your wisdom, if your words and your thoughts and your ideas and your actions fit in the filter of James 3:17. So wisdom, first of all, pure. Is it also peace-loving? Does your wisdom lead and love peace? Is your wisdom gentle? Are your ideas gentle at all times? Is your wisdom willing to yield? Is it submissive? Is it willing to yield to others? Is it full of mercy? Is it full of good deeds? Does it show no favoritism? Is it sincere? If your wisdom and your acts can fit with that definition, then we can become and act like who Jesus would call us to act like. This is a wonderful, wonderful filter for our actions. I'm going to read it again because I think if we can get all of these, then we're swimming. Is it on the thing? Can you put James 3:17 from the NLT, please, if that works, on the screen? Come on, Jason. The boys have been working on using new software and stuff, and they pulled it together like this morning. Really impressive. Why don't you give the boys, Josh and Jason, they're like mid-20s. Anyway, the men in the... Yeah, I'm only like... Yeah, I'm their age. So, but the wisdom from above is first of all pure. It's peace-loving. So is that thing you're doing, that wisdom, that way you're operating with your finance, that way you're operating with your family, with your purchasing, is it peace-loving? Is the way you're talking to your friends, the way you're building your business, the way you're investing your time, is it gentle? Is it submissive? Is it willing to yield to others, that is? Is it full of mercy? And does it have a fruit of good deeds? Does it show no favoritism? And is it sincere? That, to me, is a beautiful, beautiful decision-making process. I would, maybe we will. If you're going to make it a choice, like a big choice, why not run through it and say, okay, is this wise? Does this work? Is this a good choice? You're thinking about moving house. Is it wise? You're thinking about moving city. Is it wise? Just work it out. And maybe it is. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying just go through it. You're thinking about buying something. Thinking about selling something. What else could you be thinking about? Thinking about having another kid. Is it wise? Whoa, it's just do the filter yourself and see. But I would encourage us to be really deliberate about it and not just to say, hey, I'm living by faith, which is so wonderful. Yes, 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 yes. But let's also have some wisdom. And then if your faith and God says, like in that seeking of wisdom and faith, if God says, go for it, and it doesn't look right, and the church says, go for it, then go for it. But let's have wisdom as a part of the conversation. Let's not be afraid of wisdom. See, if there's a problem with wisdom, it's not that wisdom itself is deficient. It's that we are too big in it. It's not a deficiency of wisdom, it's a deficiency of love. So the problem with wisdom is not wisdom. The problem with wisdom is when we remove love from the equation. So let's not be afraid of wisdom. And let's not run from wisdom because we're worried about it. Let's actually run towards love and keep the wisdom, please. So, good. That's it. Patient. It works with patience. It's the long time scale. It works with love for others. And then we have this wonderful filter where it's recognizable. It's so easy to identify. If we can just run it through that filter, we can work out whether our actions are actually wise, which is good in the long term and for everyone in the world. The last word on this is Jesus. In the Bible, the last word on wisdom is Jesus. And the ask that Jesus presented is that you lay down your pride, who you are and who you think you are, all you've built, your self-sufficiency, is deny it and accept Christ and follow him. So that's this crazy request. And we're talking about wisdom, and this is the final word, and it's just this wild thing. Like, it doesn't even make sense. 1 Corinthians 1:23 says this: we preach Christ crucified. Hey, button. We preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews, and folly, like foolishness, to Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. It's like the ultimate wisdom is to lay down your own wisdom and accept the wisdom and power of God in Jesus. All right? Amen.